What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, socially distancing alongside the Fantasy Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano. And I don't, what week are we in? I don't even know how, like, we're week
it's, eight, it's Cinco seven? De Mayo, man.
It is Cinco de Mayo. Happy Cinco dude. De Mayo.
Is it a holiday? I mean, like, I feel like it's just an excuse for Americans to get drunk. Like, that's pretty all much. Cinco de Mayo is. You know, are they celebrating America's Independence Day elsewhere? No, probably not.
No. I mean,
really?
Well, that's the thing. It's not even Mexican Independence Day. It's like, it's a celebration of some battle. Like, I don't even know the whole history of it. I just know it's not that.
I'm gonna have to Google it. I don't know, man.
They also don't really celebrate it in Mexico. Like, they celebrate it more here than they do in Mexico. The other weird part is, you know, normally...
It's the Battle of Puebla. Holiday celebrated in parts of Mexico and the United States in honor of the military victory in 1862 over the French forces of Napoleon III.
All right. I know it's like, I don't really think they celebrate it that big in Mexico. I think it's more here.
It's an excuse for Americans to drink. That's exactly right. What it is.
Well, the other part is like, you know, like it's a day where, you know, Corona, the beer, I'm sure gets a whole lot of run, but I feel like this year, not too many people running out to get Corona.
No, exactly. Yeah. You don't want to say, hey, I'm going to get some Corona. No.
It doesn't really work this year. Doesn't really work this year. A couple of notes for you all out there. Now that we are a little bit past the draft, we're still going to do two shows a week. They will be shorter shows. We're just going to try to keep them around 20 or 30 minutes. So we won't go into an expansive news section. And then we'll just have like a little a category or topic that we'll talk about. But we will still be here twice a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays. So that part won't change. We'll just give you back more time in your day so you can do things like watch Korean baseball in the middle of the night.
I watched a few innings
mostly because it started like at 10 o'clock out here for opening day, 10 o'clock at night, but like I think a lot of these games start at like 2:30 in the morning and on the West Coast, so I don't know how much I'm gonna see. So today we'll talk about some guys who are in their second year who could have big breakout seasons, or may not. We'll kind of kick around what they're gonna do, but first let's talk to our faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy Esquire. Murph, did you watch any Korean baseball?
I didn't get to watch it last night. I was watching a movie and I saw people tweeting about it and I was like, oh, my chance to actually watch real live baseball. And I think it was in a rain delay actually when I was going to turn it on. One thing has got rained out, but honestly, as much as I want to watch live baseball, I'd ask for another 10 part series on Michael Jordan and just keep watching that every single weekend instead of worrying about it. I would trade that for sports. It's just the best thing I've ever watched.
I just think they should do another 10 or 20 or however many part series on all the dudes that Michael Jordan has beef with from like 20 years ago.
That's all the show is. It's just it's a way for him to be like, Clyde Drexler don't like you, Isaiah Thomas don't like you, Jerry Krause don't like you. It's all it is.
Right. It is. It's just him airing all his it is his own Festivus. Like, it's just an airing of grievances is all this is.
I didn't watch it.
But it's kind of fun.
I got to check it out. You know what I like about that the most though? Is watching the old highlights of the players that made – I mean, like, you know, it was toward the end of Magic, but the Bulls won their first championship against the Lakers, like crushed the Lakers, like the Magic, Vlade Divac Lakers. Yep. But it's so great to go back and watch, like, the players that we all, like, grew up with watching against Jordan, because it's a nostalgia trip.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Between that and like, you know, the soundtrack, the whole thing is just, it's been fun to watch. Mm-hmm. So we got two more Sundays, I think, right? Next week is 7 and 8, and then 9 and 10.
See, I had to watch 90 Day Fiance, so I didn't get a chance to watch it yet.
Oh, see, we prioritize here. We do Last Dance first.
Clearly, you are in charge of the priorities in your household. I am not, Marcus. So 90 Day Fiance, and there's like four other iterations of that damn show.
Oh yeah, I know.
It's ridiculous. And by the way, anybody who watches out there, that guy David, why don't we just hook him up with
Yolanda?
Like, yes. Why don't we? They're both getting catfished. Like, why don't we just hook those two up? Boom,
They both live in Las Vegas. It's fine. It's easy. They're both
right there. Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
All right. Never thought we'd go down the 90 Day Fiance path.
It's coronavirus, man. This is what we're left with, man.
Right. Like I said, we're not going to do a big news section, but got a couple of big stories. So let's talk about those.
Through the news.
First one, and it happened last week. We didn't get a chance to talk about it because it happened after our last podcast. But Andy Dalton has signed a 1-year deal with the Dallas Cowboys, up to $7 million possible for the Red Rifle. For him, he doesn't have to change addresses. That was part of the story, apparently, because he lives in the Dallas area. So not that he has to pack up and move. He just, you know, gets a new work phone number. I mean, look, Fabs, I've seen a lot of like big brain, galaxy brain takes that somehow this means the Cowboys are putting more pressure on Dak Prescott, or that maybe they even rescind his offer and they decide. I'm not buying any of this, right? Like, this is just insurance for their starting quarterback.
It's the Colin Cowherd syndrome. People just say dumb crap because they want a reaction. Like, that's what it is. Dalton's the backup. Like, and it's a 1-year deal. That's all he is a backup.
Right.
Dak Prescott's the future of this and the president of this franchise. And at some point, they'll get a deal done. The Cowboys are building towards having a championship roster. Now, the defense is questionable, but the offense is looking pretty darn good. So now look what happened to the Steelers last year. When Ben Roethlisberger went down, that team went to crap. It went to hell. The Cowboys don't want that. And Cooper Rush clearly wasn't the backup that they wanted. They got Andy Dalton. So God forbid anything happens to Dak. At least you've got a veteran quarterback under center who's going to be able to learn that system, play under an offensive-minded coach in Mike McCarthy, and there's going to be a drop-off, but hopefully it's not as significant as it would have been from Dak to Cooper Rush in a worst-case scenario.
Yeah, although, you know, it seems to be, at least this offseason, it's the trend, right, of teams going and getting themselves a really quality backup. First, the Saints go get Jameis Winston. Now the Cowboys get Andy Dalton. Cam Newton, Joe Flacco still hanging out there. We'll see what happens with them. But at least two teams know, like, they legitimately have starting caliber backup quarterbacks in the event that their front line guy goes down.
And this also continues the trend of Cowboys having a redheaded quarterback on the roster, because Jason Garrett was the backup out for a long, long time, then was the OC, then was the head coach, former quarterback, and now Garrett's in New York, and boom.
Yeah.
He got the red rifle.
There he goes. Are there that many redhead quarterbacks out there that they can keep this thing going?
But the Cowboys, I mean, like, Jason Garrett's a former quarterback, so he fits that the criteria, and now you got Dalton, right?
Right.
Garrett been there for a long time. And the Cowboys historically have done this too. Like, go back in time. Steve Berline, Rodney Pete. I mean, like, they've liked to have a solid backup quarterback when they've had a good starter. Like, the Cowboys for years had crappy starters and it didn't matter. Throwing out Ryan Leaf and Chad Hutchinson and Drew Henson and a bunch of these curtain jerkers out there to backup quarterback didn't matter. They're all backup quarterbacks. But when the Cowboys have that established sort of, you know, big name quarterback, they like to have a solid backup, and Dalton's going to fit that bill.
If they're going to keep the redheaded trend going, does this mean at some point they've got to make a deal for Carson Wentz later in his career? They got to go get Carson Wentz for Philadelphia just to keep it going, man. Speaking of quality backups who are going to new places, Frank Gore has signed a deal with the Jets, a 1-year deal to go to New York. This sort of coincides with another story that I saw yesterday, that Adam Gase says they're looking to lessen the load for Le'Veon Bell. One, I mean, obviously Frank Gore is going to live forever. Let's just start with that. But he looks like now he's going to be the guy who, you know, much like he did with Devin Singletary last year and frustrated a lot of fantasy managers, Frank Gore is going to come in and frustrate a lot of folks who take a chance on Le'Veon Bell. He's probably not going to get enough touches or score enough fantasy points to make it worth having him on your roster, but he's going to do enough to just wreck your season if you have Lev.
Good chance this is Adam Gase's last year with the Jets. Because, I mean, again, like, I'll tell you, I don't care. He has had no success in this league on teams not quarterbacked by Peyton Manning. Sorry. Like, I'm just saying. So, and offensive players, and he's supposed to be an offensive mind, offensive players end up leaving Gase and having success. The list of those players is quite long. And players who come to Gase from successful tenures elsewhere end up sucking. Frank Gore last year had 166 carries. The backup for the Jets last year was Bilal Powell. He led the team in carries behind Le'Veon Bell. He had 59. Le'Veon had 245 carries. Gore actually had more yards per attempt than Le'Veon Bell last season. So Le'Veon, like, he's probably like a high-end flex starter in a 10-team league now, right? Like, we did our mock draft last week for YouTube. I had him as my third running back, and that's about all I'm comfortable taking him as. In a 12-team league, if he's my RB2, I'm like, ugh, especially now that Gore's in the mix.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I was sort of hoping. I was hoping maybe for a Lev Bell bounce back this year, but this does not give me any confidence that that's going to happen. I mean, yeah, and look, it's apparent, and we said this last year, you said this before we started recording just now, that Adam Gase just doesn't like Le'Veon Bell. It's apparent. I mean, he basically has, without saying it, has pretty much said it, and his actions have sort of backed that up, and so it's just hard at this point to count on Le'Veon Bell as anything, as you said, more than a third running back, which, let's talk about a fall from fantasy grace, man. Yeah, I mean, dude, it wasn't that long ago that he was a number one overall pick.
And he's still a good running back. The system just is crap. Like, yeah. I mean, you've got to get Le'Veon Bell with a quarterback under center who's going to give him the football. He's going to be able to use his vision and his footwork to find holes in the offensive line. We all know Le'Veon Bell's one of the most crafty runners that's ever been in the league. And what the Jets do, it just doesn't allow him to do that. I mean, his yards per carry average is dreadful last season. Yeah, and so, and Frank Gore, as you always say, is going to live forever. So now we know where Gore is signing in 2021. He's going to finish his tour of the AFC East and sign with the Patriots. Right? and Gase really liked Gore when they were together in Miami. Like, this is just all bad for Le'Veon Bell. And it's unfortunate because he's a really talented back.
Yeah. So, I know that mock drafts on NFL.com open, I think, in about a week. So, the draft rankings are sort of being tweaked and everything. I think that these will have to be retweaked to probably drop Lev Bell down just a little bit. So,
yeah,
there you go. So those are your big stories.
That was the news.
Let's talk second year breakouts. I put together a list of guys, Fabs, that are going into their second year. I left out, guys like, Marquise Brown. I left out some of the guys who had really good rookie years. There's no Josh Jacobs on this list, guys like that, because look, we sort of know where they are and what they potentially could be. But these are guys who maybe flashed, maybe even didn't, but going into their second year, seeing what they possibly could do. So I got six guys on this list. We can kick it around. The first one, Daniel Jones, who right now he seems like everybody's kind of one of the favorite sleeper quarterbacks for this year. Look, obviously the upside is we saw him play most of the season last year. He definitely threw the ball well at times. Was seventh among quarterbacks in rushing yards, which was kind of some sneaky hidden fantasy points right there. The downside was the turnovers. But, I mean, Fabs, this is, without a doubt, his team. Eli Manning has retired. They still have some skill position players that are there that can be helpful. Do we see him take a big step forward this year?
I think so. I'm already on record. And I'm a Cowboys fan who hates the Giants, so you know that this is genuine. I really like Daniel Jones. The Giants did well in the draft to help him as well. They took Andrew Thomas. They took Matt Peart out of UConn. They take Shane Lemieux out of Oregon to help bolster the offensive line. I feel like the talent already is there around him with Saquon and Golden and Sterling and Darius Slayton, who's a big-time potential breakout candidate, and Evan Engram. I've mentioned a million times, but he is one of only three quarterbacks in the National Football League to have 28 plus fantasy points in four different games during his rookie season, the other two being Cam Newton and RG3. There's a lot to like. So the last 2 years we've had the Patrick Mahomes breakout and then Lamar Jackson breakout. And we all saw that coming in the industry. Right. There isn't that quarterback this year, but Daniel Jones is probably as close as you're going to get, at least for me.
Yeah. I think we really hoped that, I don't say Kyler Murray was going to be a breakout, but the discount is so long gone on drafting Kyler Murray.
Well, but Kyler averaged like 18 points a game last season, so he was pretty good. So I'm saying a guy who's going to end up, you know, Kyler was a starter in most leagues last year. Daniel Jones,
right? Won. Yeah. So, it's a thing. I did a dynasty startup draft, and I didn't get to draft him, but I did kind of swing a deal to add him to the roster. So I got him. I'm going to try and draft him in as many places as I can this year because I'm excited about what his potential could be. You mentioned Darius Slayton. I don't have him on the list, but I think he's another guy that people are expecting big things from. He played really well. I mean, he was pressed into service because a lot of guys got hurt, and I think he played really well. So I think bigger things are coming for him.
Yep.
Beautiful segment, guys. What's up?
Eddie's digging it, man.
Oh, I'm sure he is. In Kansas City, there's Mecole Hardman, who just is part of that track team that they've put together at wide receiver there with the Chiefs roster. I mean, look, we know Tyreek Hill is going to get targets. We know Travis Kelce is going to get targets. But there is room, Fabs, in that offense for another guy to sort of break out. I think we don't expect it to be Sammy Watkins. We don't expect it to be like a DeMarcus Robinson. Mecole Hardman seems like he is the guy who's in line to start getting a lot of those extra targets from Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. So I feel like there's still a ceiling on him, though. Like, I really love Hardman. And if he wasn't in an offense that had an absolute just ton of weapons, he would end up being a massive breakout candidate. And I think that he will take the next step in 2020 without question. And if you look at the percentages sort of last season when Tyreek Hill wasn't active because he had the suspension, missed some time, Hardman played like a 76% snap share at times in certain games. I believe that game against the Chargers, the one that was in Mexico City, I mean, Hardman played a big role there. He's shown that he can be a massive playmaker in the NFL. So with Sammy Watkins restructuring his contract, now he's going to stick around. We may have to wait another year for that big breakout from Mecole Hardman, but he is certainly somebody that I will be targeting, you know, later in my drafts just in case.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I know that I always feel like saying guys are better in best ball leagues is kind of a cop out, but he's going to be really good in best ball.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Yeah, dude. Yeah.
He's going to be really good in best ball leagues. Paris Campbell there in Indianapolis. He was before the draft, a guy that I kind of had on my radar as a potential, you know, later round sleeper option there. You know, look, T.Y. Hilton obviously is the lead, but they've got a quarterback now in Phillip Rivers who wants to push the ball downfield that works with Campbell's speed. Then the Colts went out and they drafted Michael Pittman. And, you know, there has been talk that Pittman is going to get a lot of work, that he, you know, could, you know, force his way into the starting lineup early. So, Faz, I'm not as excited about the Paris Campbell second year breakout as I was maybe, you know, 3-4 weeks ago.
So I would like to see where they're going to line these guys up. Is Campbell going to end up being the primary slot receiver for the Colts? Are they going to utilize Pittman more on the outside? And Pittman played a bunch in the slot at USC. So if Campbell gets more opportunities in the slot, that could potentially help his value. But you're right. At this point, in terms of Colts pass catchers, I mean, it's Hilton, it's Pittman, it's Doyle, not so much Trey Burton, but Campbell in a 10-team league is likely to be undrafted, and in a 12-team, 14-team league, likely to end up being sort of a late round, you know, flyer pick at this point. But when you look at the Colts roster, I mean, what is he potentially going to be, third or fourth best at targets?
Right.
I mean, at best. So in a best case scenario. So, and plus he's coming off of an injury riddled season. We really haven't been able to see, you know, what he could do at the next level. So a lot of question marks about him. And as you mentioned with Pittman in the mix, Campbell goes down to that late round flyer status.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, a month ago, I was a lot more optimistic about him than I am right now. You know, it's kind of goes to show how things change really quickly in this league.
Just ask Jameis Winston how quickly things can change. Top how five fantasy quarterback, and now he's a backup.
He's a backup. TJ Hawkinson, who had a great first game as a rookie against the Cardinals last year, got us all excited and then pretty much vanished from view for most of the rest of the year, which, look, a rookie tight end, that's not really a big surprise. But year two, I mean, we already have kind of pegged his Iowa buddy Noah Fant as a guy who's going to step up and have a big share of targets in Denver this coming season. Will the same thing happen for TJ Hockenson in Detroit, especially with Matt Stafford back and healthy again? I mean, the last year, the quarterback play was rough there in Detroit, Fabs. Stafford hopefully brings some stability as long as he can stay healthy. Does that mean potentially good things for TJ Hockenson in year two?
No doubt. Tight ends typically take time, man. Like we've learned that for every Evan Engram, you know, there's 100 guys who are like Hockenson who come out and show some occasional flashes, but overall don't really do much in their first seasons in the league. So Hockenson, Noah Fant, Mike Gesicki is another one. Those are like, I feel like the three big sleeper tight ends for 2020. And Hockenson, a very highly touted coming out of Iowa last season, and did have that big game against the Cardinals and really didn't do anything else down the stretch, but the talent is there. I mean, he's been compared to some of the greats, and I really feel like as a tight end too, that's where you're going to end up targeting him, somewhere in the late rounds. If your tight end one doesn't pan out, if you draft Jared Cook, for example, and things don't go well in New Orleans as they did last season, you know, Hockens is someone who could potentially end up being an even more valuable asset for fantasy owners in 2020, much like Gesicki, much like a Noah Fant.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I remember in his draft profile and all the draft hype leading up to it, people were throwing out Gronk's name.
Yeah, I know.
That's a tall bar. That's a high bar to try and reach.
That's a lot. Yeah.
So I don't know that I would yet, you know, saddle him with that, because that's a lot to ask out of somebody. But I do look forward to seeing him, you know, take a step forward this year.
Who do you like more? Do you like Fant more or Hockenson?
I think I like Fant more, just because I feel like Fant is sort of he's built and I think sort of plays more in the mold of where the tight end position is going. I think he's more sort of that Evan Engram, you know, Jordan Reed when Jordan Reed is healthy, you know, kind of guy. That he's more of a, I guess, a hybrid pass catching wide receiver tight end type. Hockenson, I think, is a good blocker as well. Those guys are becoming really, really rare in this league. So, I think I like Fant slightly more.
And also, let's keep in mind, too, that the tight end position is getting younger sort of in the middle, right? Because you've got Goddard, you've got Fant, you've got Gesicki and Hockenson, you've got Jonnu Smith in Tennessee, Hayden Hurst in Atlanta. Ian Thomas could end up playing a bigger role for the Panthers. So, like, there's some guys up there that could potentially jump up. And Blake Jarwin, is, of course, maybe loses a little bit of his luster because the Cowboys got CeeDee. But Jarwin showed some flashes last season too, and the Cowboys gave him a nice contract. So, and Jason Witten's no longer in the mix. Boy, it's going to be weird, isn't it, to watch Jason Witten play for the Las Vegas Raiders?
I mean, Jason Witten with the Raiders, Greg Olsen with the Seahawks.
Going to be weird. Going to be weird.
Yeah. Going to be very weird.
Yep. Rob Gronkowski with the Buccaneers.
With the Buccaneers.
It's going to be weird. Yeah.
Strange. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This next name I put on the list mostly out of my own morbid curiosity. So last year, I put J.J. Arcega-Whiteside as a deep sleeper, like a deep sleeper, right? Like, I mean, he's a dart throw that maybe if he hits, you're going to feel like a genius. That didn't happen. And so I was willing a month ago, you know, February, early March, was willing to sort of double down on J.J. as maybe having that deep sleeper potential. And then the Eagles went out and they drafted Jalen Reagor. Now there's talk
to other wide receivers,
a couple other wide receivers. There's talk that they're going to not only keep Alshon Jeffrey, but they really want him to be a big part of the offense. DeSean Jackson is going to be healthy. Presumably we'll see how long and how productive he can be. So I think my J.J. Arcega-Whiteside dream has probably gone up in smoke at this point.
Yeah. There's a lot of mouths to feed there. And then you've got, you know, both of the tight ends there. So there was a report that came out. He did an interview with a Spanish football podcast, and he basically said that he was hurt all last season. Mm-hmm. And in fact, he needed help going to the bathroom because he couldn't walk.
Wow. Wow.
So he was banged up, didn't meet expectations, but the Eagles didn't do him any favors, Marcus. They really didn't. Right. I don't see him being draftable in most redrafts in 2020 just because of what the Eagles did. And, you know, people forget, as much as, you know, Jalen Reagor is potentially a long-term star in this league, like, they still have Alshon Jeffrey under contract. They still have DeSean Jackson under contract. They're still going to run a lot of 12 with Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert. Greg Ward looked decent last season when he got thrust into a more prominent role. The Eagles have a lot of wide receivers, man, and a lot of receivers. So to think that Arcega-Whiteside is going to emerge as, I mean, let's be honest, Ertz, Goddard, Jefferson, or Jeffries, Jackson, and then maybe Rager. That's five guys ahead of you
from
a target right share perspective before you even get to Arcega Whiteside, and who knows if he's even the next guy in line. So.
Well, and then let's throw in the fact that Miles Sanders is going to catch passes. Yeah, so I think that dream might be done. I knew it was sort of a long shot to begin with, and that shot got even longer. So I think part of it is me just sort of being bitter watching him catch jump balls over USC defensive backs for a number of years when he was at Stanford. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen, I don't think, in the NFL. Last name I have on this list, Deontay Johnson. We talked about the Steelers quarterback situation last year was a mess once Ben Roethlisberger went down. We thought maybe James Washington, and he had one or two decent games. Deontay Johnson played well in stretches. And the other part of this, Fabs, is there is a story floating around that the Steelers may not re-sign Juju Smith-Schuster at the end of his rookie deal. That, this is obviously is rumor and innuendo season. So that's one of the ones floating around there that, obviously last year was not a great year for Juju by any stretch of the imagination, that the Steelers may try to move on from him. And especially if he has a really good year and bounce back year, then suddenly the price tag goes up. So maybe this opens the door for Deontay Johnson to step in and really make some plays and be a playmaker in that offense this year.
I do feel like the Steelers moves in the offseason and in the draft didn't do him any favors, though. They drafted Chase Claypool and they added Eric Ebron. So another team with a lot of weapons, Juju Smith-Schuster, as you mentioned, James Washington also. And, they've got some backs who can potentially catch the ball out of the backfield, like McFarland, who they drafted out of Maryland, who's more of a change of pace kind of back. I like Johnson's talent. I like his skill set. And he showed some flashes last season. And there were times he was the best Steelers wide receiver, and he was catching passes from a dude named Duck. So if you get Ben Roethlisberger back under center, that's going to do nothing but improve his outlook. With that being said, I'd still probably not target him until the later rounds in most redrafts.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I mean, I don't expect him coming off the board early or even in the mid rounds. I think he's sort of the end of the draft. Let's see if we can make something happen sort of guy.
And you have to bake in with any Steelers receiver, you have to bake in the threat that Ben Roethlisberger does not play 16 games, because we saw what happened to that offense last season when Roethlisberger was out. And if Roethlisberger suffers any kind of injury, even if he misses a few games, that is going to hurt the overall value of that receiving core, including Deontay Johnson.
Yeah, no doubt. Which is sort of why I think a lot of people, myself included, were thinking, hoping, maybe praying that the Steelers would make a run at Jameis Winston, just in the event that something happened to Ben Roethlisberger.
Would have loved it. Would have been
obviously
great.
That is not the case. So right now it's still some combination of Mason Rudolph and Devlin Hodges at quarterback there in Pittsburgh. So yeah. I don't know. Those are the guys I had on my list. Was there anybody that you really are expecting a second year guy to have a big breakout that we're not already sort of predicting at this point?
Yeah. No, I mean, you covered most of them. You covered most of the guys that Fant is somebody that wasn't on the list, but Fant is a guy who a lot of people out there are really expecting big things from. Now, the Broncos did add a whole bunch of playmakers in that draft. I mean, Albert O and Judy and Hamler. So maybe that causes him to lose a little bit of his luster. But this is still a player that I feel like is a borderline number one tight end from a fantasy perspective. Debo Samuel, who I can't even tell you how much I love this guy, and I'm going to be talking about him a lot, and I've already talked about him a lot. He's probably if he's not my favorite breakout candidate among wide receivers who are going into their second season, he's right up there. I'm a big fan of Debo. Terry McLaurin as well, considering that Dwayne Haskins and McLaurin do have a long rapport going back to their time together at Ohio State, and hopefully Haskins can take the next step. I'm not a big fan of him personally, but hopefully he can take the next step and become a solid NFL starter who doesn't make a lot of mistakes. And, Josh Jacobs is an easy one.
Jacobs is an easy one. I just want them to throw the ball more. I want them to throw the ball to Jacobs more. Although, they have Bowden from Kentucky, who can sort of double as a pass catcher too, which makes me think they're just setting up to frustrate us again by not throwing the ball.
One thing that you need to keep in mind, though, and I get it. On the surface, you're thinking, oh man, that would be just awesome if they can throw the ball to the backs a little bit more. It's going to be interesting to see what Las Vegas does, because everything that they did in the draft, right, points towards extending the field and throwing it vertically, getting the ball deep with Ruggs. And you've got Tyrell Williams who can do that as well. You've got some playmakers there. But Derek Carr threw the ball to his backs almost 22% of the time last season, which is and his leading receiver was a tight end in Darren Waller. It's going to be really interesting to see what Las Vegas does, because what they did personnel wise is certainly more in line with throwing the ball deep, getting vertical more often than what Derek Carr has been successful at in his career, which is throwing the short and intermediate routes and targeting his tight ends and running backs. That's going to be a big storyline from a fantasy perspective. What can Derek Carr do, and how do the Raiders run that offense differently than they have in the past with what they've added this offseason?
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to give a guy tools. It's another thing for him to actually use them.
So exactly.
We'll see if that's going to be the case. Before we go, on Monday, the NFL lost a true legend. Don Shula passed away at the age of 90. I mean, this is a guy, like, you always hear people talk about, you know, certain people, players, coaches, what have you. Can you tell the story of the NFL without this guy? And you truly cannot tell the story of the National Football League without Don Shula, from his days as a player to his early days as a coach, coaching in Baltimore. Obviously, the run, the long run he had in Miami, the undefeated team, the Super Bowl, the Super Bowl titles. Even at his life and career as a businessman in Shula Steakhouse, even if you weren't a Dolphins fan, you were aware of and probably and on some level kind of in awe and respect of Don Shula. I mean, this he literally was for years, one of the true faces of the National Football League. There's no way around that.
No doubt. I mean, I lived in South Florida for almost 6 years. I mean, there's highways down there that are named after him. So I've been to Shula Steak, like. Heck, I mean, one of the games that really made me love the NFL was San Diego Chargers, Miami Dolphins. And you always remember the iconic picture of Kellen Winslow being helped off the field by his teammates. One of the greatest games in NFL history. I remember that game. Don Shula, I believe he only had two losing seasons in his entire career. You may want to check the stats. I'm pretty sure he only had two losing seasons. This guy was a winner. It was fun to watch him. If you watched in the Nick Bonacani documentary that they had, I believe it might have been on HBO. I mean, it was sort of a sad documentary overall because of Bonacani's health, but still very interesting. And they interviewed Shula on that, and it brought back a lot of memories. And Shula, if you think about it, he really helped change the game too, because the league was very run-based. It was very run-heavy. Maybe not that exciting. Then all of a sudden, Dan Marino enters the league. And, you know, Shula's thinking, hey, this is a player who is showing us what the NFL can be. It could be very exciting. More of an arsenal in terms of the passing game. More of a more exciting NFL. Instead of running the ball constantly, throwing the ball deep. The Marx brothers, Mark Clayton and Mark Duber. Shula really helped mold what the NFL became and has become. And I mean, you could argue he's the greatest coach of all time. I get it. Like, Bill Belichick has won a lot of Super Bowls, and Shula, you know, didn't win a ton of Super Bowls, but no one won more games than him. And also longevity, you have to factor that in as well.
Yeah.
If you're a coach in any sport and you don't get the job done, you're out. Shula coached for a long, long time.
33 years as a head coach, and you were correct. Just two losing seasons. 76 with the Dolphins was 6-8 back when there was still a 14-game schedule. And then 88 with the Dolphins at 6-10. But that was it. Those were his only two losing seasons. In 33 years. And it's funny, you talk about the way he sort of changed the game. So you're saying he's one of the original running backs don't matter guys.
Well, I mean, dude, he had Larry Zonka, so I don't think I'm going that far. But I mean,
very true.
but he, I mean, much like Dan Marino changed like fantasy football, because back in the day, like, you know, quarterbacks were not as valued in fantasy. And then Marino comes along and he's slinging it, you know, 30, 40, 50 times. And he's throwing for 4,000 yards and he's throwing for 48 touchdowns. And like that changed. So
yeah,
that also changed a little bit in terms of what we do from a fantasy perspective. You know, now it's a passing league, and it started to become a passing league in part because of Don Shula.
Yeah. Fun fact, the first ever fantasy league I played in as a freshman in college in 1994, it was me and a buddy. We kind of shared a team. And our first ever draft pick was Dan Marino, which shows you how little we knew
about fantasy
football or anything.
But, you know, back in the day, like, I mean, if you remember, like, Favre was a first-round pick. Dante Culpepper was a first-round pick. Like, quarterbacks were first-round picks. You know, hell, I remember when Cordell Stewart, people were talking about him being a first-round pick. You remember? So. Yeah. Yeah, things have certainly changed in the league, but Shula will certainly be missed, and he's one of the icons of the NFL.
Absolutely, absolutely. So thoughts and prayers go out to his family, his friends, the whole Dolphins organization, the NFL as a whole. Don Shula will truly, truly be missed. So there you go. That is it. We are done. We appreciate you listening and downloading and watching as well. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, we never really grow up. We only learn how to act in public. Take care of yourselves, and we'll see you on Thursday.